Welcome to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete Sunshine 96.7 FM. Join us as we celebrate the sparks that ignite, the events that inspire, and the songwriters that create. With your host, Steve Robb.
Cersei is an American rock duo from the Capital District of New York, consisting of Melanie Kramer and her husband, Rich Labuti. While only a duo, Melanie's strong vocals are backed by a mixture of drums, guitar, flute, and bass. I met them at a show earlier this year, and I can attest that if my eyes were closed, I would never have believed I was hearing a duo. In addition to touring throughout the U.S., Cersei has been the opening act for artists including Grace Potter and the Nocturnals, Maroon 5, Blues Traveler, Collective Soul, Cheap Trick, Vertical Horizon, and many more, and they've also been featured on HBO, PBS, MTV, and Showtime. Melanie and Rich, welcome to Song Creating.
Hello. Thank you for having us.
It's great, and I love having two people here because it's usually just myself and one other person, and every now and then I get to interview a duo, and it just it opens things up. So to be more specific, you guys, you say you're from Albany, but you're really from Clifton Park. And I am from Burnt Hills.
Oh, there you go. So
I know that neck of the woods pretty well. And it's not an area that, at least from my recollection, that a lot of great musical bands come from. You know, it's not like Albany, Georgia, for instance. And I wondered how you guys... God, I mean, I assume, did you start playing in some of the local bars on the lakes there and go from that? Or what got you out of Clifton Park?
Yeah, our first bunch of shows were in
Albany
and Saratoga Springs. Yeah.
We met there because we both went to college in Albany. Mm-hmm. And so we met each other in college and started writing songs and playing shows in that area. And the Capital District of New York actually has a really great music scene. And some really talented songwriters come out of there. Yeah. There's some really great music there.
Yeah.
And we cannot afford to live right in the city of Albany or right in the city of Saratoga. So we settled in the burbs, which is cheaper and allowed us to build a studio in our basement where we record and rehearse without having the police called on us. And
and it was that location, I think, was a good springboard for us because, you know, we're within 3 hours of Boston, New York City, Hartford, Syracuse. So in those markets, all have been very good to us over the years. It kind of helped us build up, you know, little pockets of fans. And then we just kind of started to spread and spreading and tour further and further from that area.
Yeah. And Saratoga is a great music town.
Yeah.
That's actually where we say we're from because we're in Saratoga County.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
No, some people have heard of it.
Yeah.
And nobody knows where Burnt Hills is.
No.
Those who grew up there. This is back. So neither one of you grew up in that area or did you?
I grew up out more towards Amsterdam area in a really small town out that way up in the mountains. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I grew up in and was born and raised in Providence, Rhode Island. But then I went to RPI, which is a school in Troy near in the Capital District.
So. And I went to Siena and we met each other at an audition for a disco cover band, which we both got into that band. And we played in it for a couple of months until we wanted to poke our eyes out with sticks from having to play Brick House. And
it was fun the first 47 times.
Brick House is a great song, but when you have to play it nonstop to people shouting in your face, it becomes less fun. And then we started writing songs. So,
And this is back. So your first album, I think, was 2004, right?
Around
2002,
I think, first
song.
Okay.
Yeah. So when are we talking about here? How long have you two been really doing
this? We started Cersei in the year 2000. So that's around the time that we met. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay. Wow. And has it, when you, so right now the two of you are a duo, and you've always been a duo, I think, or was there a period of time where there was a band?
We started as a duo.
Yeah.
But a more traditional orchestration. So I was the singer and Rich played acoustic guitar. And
we started doing a bunch of shows just like that.
I played like hand percussion and that kind of thing. And then we were writing songs more for a full band. And Rich being a bass player and not considering himself a lead guitarist, felt comfortable playing kind of rhythm guitar on the acoustic, but never really... And I play piano, but never to the point where I felt like I should be really playing it in public. I mean, I do play it in public sometimes, but it's, you know, it's not my first instrument. So we hired other people.
Okay.
So
we tried to make it work as a four piece for a few years. And then I think we ditched that in 2005.
Now, Melanie, were you drumming in this band or just singing?
In the disco band.
Or in either of these bands, or this formation of Circe?
No, typically we would hire different drummers to play with us. I played drums on a few of the early records, Some of the songs were not me playing drums. Some of the songs were a drum machine in the early records.
Yeah.
And then I started playing drums full time probably
2005. Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. So let's talk about the personnel, so to speak, of Circe and what each of you does, because, you know, it's really, I mean, it's quite a full sound and there's a lot going on. You guys have a lot to think about. So I wonder if you could just elaborate on each of your roles here.
Yeah, I'm going to let Rich take that because it was really all his idea.
Well, it started with the dinosaurs and then, I made the switch from playing bass to guitar. That was one big move. And then we had Melanie singing, obviously, and then Melanie was the drummer. So the thing that we were kind of really missing was the bass. So we tried a few things in the early days. They didn't work out, but what we ended up doing is made kind of my own bass sample library. So I played a couple of octave of just whole notes on the bass, and then I made some long, short, and medium, and that's what we started out with. And we're actually still using a lot of those samples today. But we loaded those into it's a Roland unit. It's called the SPD-SX, and Melanie puts it on, mounted on her drum kit. And a lot of drummers use that for like conga sounds, percussion sounds, but we use it almost exclusively for bass. So Melanie has that on her drum kit. And then I have a MIDI cable that I connect into it. So I have access to the same group of sounds with basically a keyboard at my feet. So it's like a kind of like a foot controller, reminiscent of the movie Big, Tom Hanks.
Well, or is it kind of like an organ keyboard?
It's very similar.
Like boob pedals.
Yes, yeah, boob pedals. Or what like an organist would play with their feet.
Yeah.
And so we then have access to those same groups of sound. So in a lot of the songs, Melanie is playing the bass while she's doing the beats in, let's say, the verse. And then when the chorus happens, I'll take over in the chorus. And sometimes even in phrases of bass lines, someone will just hit a random note that someone is occupied doing one of the other things that can't do the bass. When we work out the songs to play live, we argue because nobody wants to play the bass.
We have the ability in each song to play 18 different bass notes.
Yeah,
in
each song. And you know, we're running pop songs, so there's not usually that many bass notes.
Right.
There's a lot of stuff to think about.
Yeah, we don't really think about it so much anymore, thank goodness. Yeah. We do it so much. A lot of it's just muscle memory.
Yeah. We try not to let the shtick of it interfere with the delivery of the songs. You know, a lot of people don't even notice, especially that Melanie is doing it. Like people can see me and see I'm doing something with my feet, but Melanie does it just so gracefully with her stick. A lot of people don't realize that she's doing it. And that's good. We want people to listen to the songs, not just be uber focused on, you know, the crazy things that we're doing.
And I play the drums standing because, as a singer, I have a very big voice, and so it's much easier to get proper breath support from your diaphragm if you're standing. And so that's why we approach the drums in that way of me standing up. And also just as a front person, it's better to be able to move around with the music and move around with the crowd.
Are you saying all the drummers are lazy?
So, no, they're much smarter than me because when I started doing this, I was much younger and it didn't hurt my body as much.
I'm thinking that you must have some pretty strong calves, Melanie.
Yeah.
So were you a drummer like this disco band? Did you apply for it as a vocalist or as a drummer or both?
Vocalist. I was never a drummer until Rich and I started Circe and couldn't find two other people that wanted to play as much as us. And
wow. So you're kind of new to drumming. Yes. Rich is kind of new to guitar playing.
Yes.
Wow. I mean,
I consider myself a singer at heart, and I think he still kind of considers himself a bass player. And now we play drums and lead guitar, and I play piano at some shows
And flute.
Yeah. And flute. It's interesting.
Yeah.
But it's cool. It made us grow. And it's for me, becoming a drummer has made me to listen to songs that I had heard a million times in an entirely different way. It's interesting when you learn a new instrument, especially if you always approached a song as listening to the lead vocal, all of a sudden focusing on the rhythm section is very different way to approach a song. And it's made me a better musician. So, yeah.
Do you guys ever get the Black Keys comparison?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All the time. Yeah.
It used to be the White Stripes because there's two of us.
That's true. That's right. Yeah. White Stripes, Black Keys. I get those two mixed up all the time.
We love both of those bands. Yeah, yeah. We are, much poppier than those bands, but we do love both of those bands.
As long as they don't start singing the Captain Snail or Sonny and Cher, I think we're all good.
True. That's true. The writing that you guys started doing back in 2000, I guess, this is writing together. And has that always, is it still the original Lennon and McCartney, or are you going off on your own sometimes now too, writing separately?
I feel like it's always almost together. Always together. Yeah.
Sometimes one of us will come up with an idea, but we like record it and present it to the other one and work on it together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you've lasted a lot longer than Lennon and McCartney lasted.
Yeah. Too. Sadly.
Yeah. Although, I think they wrote 10 times as many songs as us. Yeah. They were very prolific, for sure.
I wish we wrote songs as well as Lennon and McCartney.
Well, I think we can all say that.
Yeah.
And I think we should let people know you two are actually married now, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
When did that happen in the course of this whole career?
Been married for how many years?
We've been married since 2015.
Quick.
But we were living in sin for many more years before that. It was pretty early on in our relationship and we started coupling up.
We were friends for about a year or two.
Yeah.
And then we started dating.
Yeah.
So did that start affecting the performance or the songwriting? Did it affect anything?
I mean, not really. I would say the biggest change in the early days, we got some advice from some industry people that ended up maybe being bad, and that they thought that we shouldn't be open about the fact that we're a couple. And they also said that we should not be so friendly with our fans and the crowd.
We should be less approachable,
more like
more tension,
aloof, you know?
Yeah.
So we kind of bought into that for a while. And then when we got to the point where we were like, it's really a lot of work to try to be cool. And we never really were cool. So we just started being ourselves on stage and with our friends and our fans, that a lot of them had become friends. That was, I think, the biggest change when we just told people, yeah, we're a couple and we talk about it on stage. I feel like people I feel like our shows got better after we started doing that.
Well, it's a lot of pressure to try to be something that you're not.
Yeah.
And we just, we don't do music because of that. We never started writing songs or playing shows because we wanted to be famous or we wanted to be some sort of elusive thing. And, we tried to get signed for a little while because we thought that's what you were supposed to do. We did get signed to an indie label. But, you know, the major labels that saw us liked our music, but they just kept saying, you're too friendly. You're too nice. You have to I don't know. It's just not us.
I'm looking at the two of you, especially looking at Rich here, and his. He's just got such a smile. He's always got the smile on his face. You know, I mean, Melanie, you as well, but I cannot see attitude. You guys do not emit attitude.
No.
We're not a shoegazer band. But I mean, to get back to where we went off the tangent, they get back to your original question. I don't think us being a couple affected the songwriting too much. I think we've always tried to separate the professional aspect of our lives from the personal, and that, you know, obviously is working for us because we're still together and still writing music. We've been brutally honest with each other when we write, and neither one of us is afraid to say, I don't like that. Right. Let's move on. Try something else.
We've tried writing songs with other people. And for me, that's much harder because you try to be polite and considerate of other people's feelings. We don't actually do that for each other when we write songs. Mm. We are not polite. We are not considerate of each other's feelings at all. We are brutally honest when we write a song together.
Yeah.
Starts a lot of fights, actually. And then sometimes songs come from that.
Yeah.
But I feel like the songwriting, for me anyway, lyrically, has changed a bit over the years because just from maturing and growing up. I feel like I wrote a lot of angrier songs early on because I dated people that were not as nice as Richard. And, that came through in the songwriting. And I feel like I don't really focus the song so much on relationships, but more on emotions and humanity at large.
Yeah. Do you guys take a break from songwriting, or is it just, I mean, you're together all the time. Is it?
It's actually kind of hard to find time to write songs.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because we play so many shows. I wish that we had a bit more time where we could just be creative in a room together and write songs.
Yeah. So the time spent in a band going from one place to the next is
a challenge.
I mean, we
don't have a day job, so we have to keep the circus on the road because we have to pay the bills. And so we play a lot of shows. It's like 200 plus.
Yeah.
250 shows a year, so it's a lot. So trying to find time to write and record is challenging.
Yeah, I mean, most artists, I think, and musicians that are working have the same. You have to make a choice. Certain times of your life, you have to make music, and other times you have to make money. And a lot of times, you can't do both. So sometimes, you know, you have to stop making money and being on the road just so that you can make music. But I mean, we have little bits of inspiration, you know, all the time. Like we're on stage where the phones come out and Melanie will record me playing something, or Melanie will be jogging or walking or whatever and sing stuff into her phone. And then we go back and revisit those.
My mom just got her piano tuned. So when we were home, I wrote a whole bunch of new ideas on the piano and recorded them with the cell phone. But now it's just a matter of, you know, finding time to sit down with those ideas and put them into full-fledged songs.
Yeah.
So,
you've got, and you've got an acoustic version of the song we're going to talk about today coming out.
Yes.
Which I guess was a simpler way to record this great song.
Yeah. We've kind of done this little pattern where the last Friday of every month, we've been trying to release a new track. So the last Friday of May, and this will be a new version of a song previously released.
Mm. And we literally just approved the master right before this.
Right before we got on the Zoom call with you, actually. The master is done. So it's an acoustic version of Brave and Kind. And it's probably the number one fan favorite song.
We're gonna get to that because that's what we're going to talk about.
Okay.
So where are you now?
Santa Barbara, California.
Oh, my gosh. Mm. And you travel in this, it looks like a minivan by your videos.
Well, no, it's a white van. It's a white transit van, a Transit 250.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
His name is Axel Rhodes.
Our fans named all four of our vans. This is our fourth van. So we have contests and our fans name them.
Okay. Axel Rhodes.
Yes.
Okay. Oh, great. There's a video, I can't think of what song it is, where you're the camera is set up on your dashboard.
Sweet Dreams.
It's more fun.
Yeah.
And you know, so there's all these cuts and you're singing the same song and you're both in the same place, but the weather changes, the light changes, everything changes every second. And that must have taken a lot of time.
It took us a year.
Yeah. We recorded all of those in 2019. And then we thought, oh, well, someday we'll have time to edit them. And it seemed like we weren't ever going to have time to edit it together. And then the pandemic happened. So we had a lot of time to do editing.
That's a song of ours called Sweet Dreams, and it's a song about life on the road. So we thought that would be a great video for that song.
Well, you make it look really appealing. I don't know if it actually is, but you make it,
it look that way. It's awesome.
So let's go way back. Tell me about how you guys got into the music and into songwriting. Is this a high school, middle school? And you know, lyric writing is always something difficult to people strive for. Where's the starting point for all of this with each of you?
I used to write songs when I was a little kid. I grew up luckily with a dad who played the piano, so there was always a piano in my house. So I used to write my first songs on the piano and would write lyrics there. And then I wrote a lot of poems. I was very into creative writing. My whole life was the co-editor of my school newspaper and wrote a lot of, we had a poetry section of that paper and I had a double major in college, one of which was English. So that's always been something for me. I never really thought that I would be a songwriter as my career. When I was younger, I wanted to be on Broadway. And then as I got older, I thought that wasn't practical and I was very good at, academic pursuits. And so I pursued that and went to college.
Wicked smart.
Went to college with a double major in psychology and English. And I was pre-law and I didn't do any of that. and I met Richard and, he convinced me that I could give this whole thing a try and here we are.
So your singing is, you know, it's such a well-developed and mature voice.
Thank you.
Was this back in the chorus and the school plays, school musicals, that kind
of thing? Everything. We had a wonderful music program in my high school and even my elementary school. I had a teacher named Mr. Guba way back in the day when I was a little kid who encouraged me to sing and would give me free voice lessons after school. Shout out to Mr. Guba. And I would join every club that was summer theater. I gave up all my summer vacations and joined the summer theater and did everything that they offered at school musically. Marching band, concert band, wind ensemble, all of it. My parents couldn't afford private lessons, so I just did everything
at school
that they
What was the town, Melanie, or what is the town, Melanie, that you grew up in?
I grew up in a town called Pattersonville, New York. It's out towards Amsterdam.
I know Fonda and Waterville.
Yeah.
You got all that. So kind of that middle
very
of
rural.
New York State.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rural area. Yeah.
A lot of farmland.
Yeah.
Okay, Rich. Let's hear it.
Well, I mean, I didn't come from a musical family at all. I mean, my parents always listened to music.
But his mother is a very good dancer.
My mother likes to dance. My very first day of high school, they sit you alphabetically. My last name is Labuti. The person sat behind me was Listengart, Stephen Listengart. He introduced himself in the very first day of high school. He said, my name's Steve. I play guitar. You should get a bass because then we can form a band and meet girls. So I convinced my parents that I needed a bass for my education and they bought me one. And then I just learned to play. I didn't take lessons. I just learned from playing along with records, a lot of Police songs and U2 and just a bunch of random things. And my friend Steve and I, with some other folks, formed a band called the Spud Muffins. And we played a bunch of shows. We wrote songs that I'm sure were terrible. And then, you know, we played a bunch of covers. And ironically, all five of the people in that band today, full-time professional musicians. I don't know how that
really,
it's pretty amazing. Yeah. In all different aspects. And then, you know, similar to like what Melanie was saying, like I always liked music, but you know, it was a blessing and a curse that I was a very good student, because people, you know, encouraged me to go into, you know, different careers other than music.
Yeah.
So, you know, I went to RPI as a biology major, but music was always there in the background. I was in bands that wrote songs and all throughout college. And then, you know, near the end of that time, that's when I met Melanie. We started writing songs, and it was, you know, it's that point in your life where you're like, oh, maybe this is something feasible that we can do. But I mean, it's a tough road. I understand why parents push you away from a career in the arts, because it is definitely a tougher road. There's no consistency with income, yeah. We'll say.
Right. The security, the severance packages, things like that.
Yeah.
Right.
Did you guys transition from, I mean, were you ever, when you got out of college, did you have employment in your respective professions and do this? You
know, I did an internship at a drug rehab facility where I was a counselor. And I did that for my senior year of college, and they hired me for a paying job, and I worked there for about 2 months, and they laid off everyone who didn't have seniority, which was me. And yeah. Rich and I had already started the band by then, and things were going very well, and so I didn't go back when they called me back to work, and that was it.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so, I didn't, it, like, right when I was done with college, I started a studio with a recording studio with a friend of mine that I was in a band with. And that's actually, we were recording a band there, and the drummer in that band was like, hey, I'm putting together this disco cover band if you want to audition. And then that was, he also knew Melanie. So we ended up at that same audition for that, mm-hmm. for that disco cover band.
Yeah, wow. For a little while, we didn't do the band, you know, full time, because I was I was still trying to finish school, and my mother would have killed me if I didn't finish school. So I had to finish that. But yeah,
somehow it all worked out.
Knock on wood somewhere.
One for strength, two for joy, three for better days, and all that I counted on seems so far away. So here I stand on foreign ground, trying not to sway. Nothing left to lose, but everything dared me to try to make me whole, and I will fight, I will try to be brave. Everything
We are back with Melanie Kramer and Rich Labuti of the band Circe. And this is a heavy tune. Well, it doesn't sound that way, right? It's definitely a triumphant song, but it does have quite the story behind it, and you've probably told it many times, but
yeah. So this song is it's probably the number one fan favorite song, which for us is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Because it's a song that comes straight from our soul, I guess. Mm-hmm. This song, Brave and Kind, is one that Rich and I wrote the first time that I was diagnosed with cancer. And I've had cancer twice, and I'm incredibly lucky to say that I have survived cancer twice. Mm-hmm. So we wrote this one while I was going through treatment the first time. And so it was a very terrifying time for us. And we really didn't know how to deal with it. We didn't share it with the fans because we just didn't know how to. We didn't want to make anyone else afraid, and we didn't know how to share the news without sounding afraid.
Did you still have the energy to perform?
Yeah, the first time that I went through it, I had radiation therapy. I didn't have to have chemo the first time. So when you do radiation, you have to be in the same place 5 days a week for them to give you the treatments. So we couldn't really tour very far. We would, on the weekends, we would try to go within a 4-hour, 5-hour radius of home because I had to be back home on Monday for my treatment.
You were still doing 2 or 3 shows a week though, which is insane, but yeah.
I still was doing, three shows a week.
Yeah.
It got hard towards the end because I had breast cancer, and so the radiation was up around this area of my arm. And basically when you get radiation therapy, it's like getting a sunburn every day and then doing nothing to treat it and then going back and getting a sunburn again. Mm. So my arm was very raw, which made it difficult when I was drumming because I was ripping the skin open and it was bleeding quite a bit and blistering. Oh. So that was difficult physically.
Yes.
But no, we weren't sharing any of this with the fans. We were just going to the shows and telling them that everything was normal. We shared it with them after we knew everything was okay. Mm-hmm. And the second time that I was diagnosed, we had to cancel a 3-month tour because we were out west. Mm-hmm. And I asked my oncologist if I could finish the tour. And she said, no, you have to come home now.
She said no. And her very strong Russian accent.
Russian, and he's very blunt. And she takes no prisoners when she delivers news, but she's also very kind.
Yeah.
So she allowed me to play the shows in Texas and then come home. So that only delayed me about 2 weeks. So I did that and came home and had to start treatment. And that time we shared it with the fans and we learned a lot. So when we wrote Brave and Kind, it is a very, like you said, hopeful and triumphant song. And I think it was a little bit about us writing a song about how we wanted to feel and how we did feel in some moments when we felt strong, but not how we felt all the time, or at least not how I felt all the time. There were many, many moments where we would break down and cry and be afraid, but we didn't want to write a song about that. We wanted to write a song that allowed us, there's a chant at the end that says, I am blood, I am bones, but I am not afraid. And we made it a chant because that was what we were trying to tell ourselves so that we could get through it. So that's where the song came from. And now we pretty much end every show with that song. Mm-hmm. And we do a stripped down acoustic version of it at every show, which is why we just recorded it that way.
Yeah.
Because the song is really all about the message.
Yeah.
And we feel like the message gets through better in that more stripped down version.
Sure.
And we've learned through all of our interactions with the fans and being more open and honest about this part of our story. You know, the song is really not about us. It's not about cancer. It's not about me. It's about being human and being in a tough spot and trying to find a way through. And it's about, you know, trying to be brave when you don't know how to be. And it's about trying to still be kind to the world around you when sometimes that's really hard, because when you're afraid and you're fearful, sometimes you want to lash out. And so, you know, what I say at the end of every show is that I know that everyone out there has a story. Every human being has a story, and we don't know what everyone's story is. We don't know how hard it was for them to get up and face the day that day. We don't know how much courage it took to just get out of bed and face the day. Because you don't know what everyone's going through, because you can't always tell. Mm-hmm. And so we always try to approach with kindness and an open heart and allow people to be human, basically.
Yeah.
That's how we try to live our life. And that's how we try to put our music out there. Because everybody at our show is a human being with a story who has survived many, many things, or they wouldn't be there with us in that moment, making that moment. And that's what that song is about for us. And I think that that's why it's connected with so many people, because it allows you to try to find some strength when you maybe don't have it, you know. And yeah, we've been blessed by getting emails from people and heard stories from people face to face at our shows that that song has helped them through some sort of tough time in their life. We've had people tattoo the lyrics of that song on their body.
I think it's our most tattooed song.
Wow.
Yeah.
And so to know that something that we created during a time when we were afraid, but wanted to not be, has helped people during those same times in their life to try to move forward is really the best thing in the whole world. It's the whole reason why we create music and the whole reason why we write songs. Like I said earlier, we never started writing songs to try to be famous. For us, it's all about connecting with other human beings on a deeper level than we usually allow ourselves to do every day as functioning adults. We're supposed to be buttoned up. You know, adults who function in the world are supposed to have a certain etiquette, which requires us to put up walls and button ourselves up a little bit in order to not seem crazy. And so when we play music, we try to take all that away and just have a moment with people. And that song definitely allows us to do that.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's what it's about.
So in the, as you were going through this, and you said this was during your first bout with cancer, right?
Yeah.
How did this song evolve? What did it evolve from? I think you've alluded to what it evolved from. What was the, if you recall, you know, the growth of the song and the spark of the song? Was there a line in particular?
Yeah, I mean, in the beginning, I can tell you it was difficult to perform the song without crying.
Sure.
Sometimes I couldn't be in the moment of the song. Sometimes I had to just sing the song. Some nights I couldn't play the song. Mm-hmm. Some nights we didn't do the song. You know, I couldn't.
When we were writing it, I feel like it was a little bit different. A lot of the songs start out with just like a chord progression. And nonsense words, like, you know, Paul McCartney often talks about when he wrote Yesterday, woke up in the morning, sang Scrambled Eggs. And a lot of our songs start out with these kind of like nonsense words. I don't feel like that happened with this one. I feel like the lyrically, it came together relatively quickly.
I mean, neither of us are particularly religious people at all. But I almost feel like this song is kind of like a prayer. Like it came out of us like a wish.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And then we started to figure out a way to live our lives according to those words. But we weren't really doing it when we wrote those words.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Did is this the only song that you wrote or attempted to write about your experience?
Well, the second time that I was going through it, we wrote the song Like a Drum, and we wrote that song after I survived it a second time. And the lyric for that is, beat my troubles like a drum. I will beat this like a drum. And
the approach the second time was fueled by a little bit more anger.
You know, I did everything right according to what the doctors say and according to what everything, you know, all the manuals say, how to stay cancer free. You know, I don't smoke. I don't do drugs. I hardly ever. How many drinks do I have in a year? Two.
Yeah.
I am a vegetarian. I work out every day. You know, I am a relatively healthy individual. And so I do everything that you're quote unquote supposed to do. Sometimes just shit happens. You know, my cancers were all hormonally based. And so, I mean, that's what it is, you know? And there may be a genetic component to my second one because absolutely. I had the same cancer that my mom had the second time. The first time it was a different cancer. So, you know, I was a little frustrated and angry with the second diagnosis because I felt like I had done everything that I was supposed to do. And I had one doctor say to me at one point, well, sometimes there's a secondary cancer caused by X, Y, and Z that we did for your treatment. Maybe you're one of those people. And that, you know, can't help but feel angry when that happens, you know? So that song, Like a Drum, is a little more feisty. I wouldn't say it's angry,
but empowering.
Still hopeful and empowering because I never wanted to write a song about anger with cancer because there's no good outcome from that. Because at the end of the day, I have a lot of gratitude over the fact that I survived. And a lot of people don't get to have that be their story if they get that diagnosis. So really my overwhelming feeling when it comes to cancer is gratitude.
And I feel like both the experiences definitely affected our songwriting, especially lyrically. And just in general, it was a little, you know, between the two experiences with Melanie with cancer and being signed to the label and then getting past all that, it was a little bit liberating where we weren't trying to do a certain kind of thing with the songwriting. We just said, I know that this one song is nothing like this other song, but we wrote both of them and they're both going to go on our record. So it was a little bit, you know, freeing, you know, it changes your perspective on life and what's important and what's not. And I feel like that trickled into a lot of the songwriting as well. Cause we were just like,
and just our lives in general,
we were just like, screw it. You know, every so often somebody in the industry would be like, well, your sound isn't, homogenous enough. Yes. They said, you know, it's to this, it's to that. And, you know,
don't smile so much. Yeah. Don't make eye contact with the crowd. Yeah. Your songs don't fit in a box. They don't all sound the same. Yeah. Blah, blah, blah,
this drives me crazy. You know, you listen to the Beatles' White Album, you go from Helter Skelter to Bungalow Bill, you know, or Dear Prudence and Revolution, you know, it's God. Why can't we have that?
Yeah, like that's the best band of all time, the Beatles, right? So like, why are we trying to reinvent the wheel? Like, why are people not allowed to explore different sounds? Why does every song have to sound the same in order for it to be, I don't know, whatever. Yeah.
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 Well, what do you guys, if you were to categorize yourself, I think what is it? How does your line go? It's kind of a rock band with a folky. I can't remember the words.
We say sassy pop rock.
That's right.
With folk intimacy.
Yes. Yeah.
Because we're not a folk band, but we do tell a lot of stories at our shows, and we're very intimate with those stories, which is often something you hear at a folk show only. But we're a pop rock band is what we are. We're writing songs that are pop rock. And but we bear our soul. So, yeah.
Did you guys play many covers in your time?
Well, in the disco cover band, there was
disco cover band. You did.
But, you know, now
we sprinkle them in.
Yeah, we do a range of things. We do like a Fleetwood Mac song. We do a couple of Beatles songs.
Nina Simone.
Yeah. Do they ever, anything from the, did you ever utilize old songs like as inspiration to find your way through something you're creating?
Yes.
I mean, all the time. Yeah. Yes. I mean, it's like writing a book and having a good vocabulary. I feel like for me, it was really helpful to learn a bunch of other songs just so you can speak the language, and especially, listening to the Beatles, we very often have a moment in songwriting process where we're like, what would the Beatles do here for like a funky little bridge or just a song dynamic or,
I'm a sucker for a good seventh chord.
Yeah.
Which, the Beatles have seven chords in like every song, and I'm a sucker for a good seventh chord. Yeah. Rich always knows when he's showing me an idea that he wants me to like, he throws in a couple seventh chords, and I'm like, what's that?
The major seventh chords in particular. Or the tremolo. If there's like a part that's maybe a little arpeggiated and Mel's like, oh, I don't know. I said, well, let me do this. And I put on the tremolo. She's like, ooh, I like that. Get the vibe of that. Because sometimes that's what it is. I mean, like in pop music, there's really, there's nothing that we've written progression wise or song format wise that hasn't been done 1,000 times.
Yeah.
So it's really all about those little tiny lead ins to choruses or intros to songs or, the way you do a turnaround or a transition that really makes the song unique.
Mel, I assume you know how to read music given your band history, but Richard, do you know? I mean, you picked up the bass. Are you like Paul McCartney who swears he doesn't read music?
Yeah, I mean, like...
still skeptical of that.
If you put it down in front of me, I can figure it out. But I definitely can't. What's the old joke? How do you get a guitar player to turn his volume down? You put sheet music in front of him. There's little to no chance that I'll be able to sight read anything.
I feel like you have a very good working knowledge of music theory, though.
Yeah, I think that's more what I should have indicated. Yeah, I mean, you know the seventh, the major sevenths, and you can work your way around that. If somebody said, let's go to the third here and start the bridge on.
Right. Yes.
Okay.
And that's been very helpful with songwriting, like just knowing, relative majors and minors, because, that's songwriting 101 to switch to a chorus or a verse is, to go relative minor or major. And just little, things that you just pick up innately from listening to music and then especially playing along with it. You're like, oh, well, that shouldn't work, but that's very clever. And you like that. And you kind of, that stuff sticks in your brain. So when you're, trying to... like we often are in a situation where we've written a verse and a chorus that we love and we're like, does it need a bridge or does it need a solo? And, sometimes just having that, like I said, vocabulary in your toolbox, you can be like, well, there was this song I loved and it did this kind of halftime dynamic where it, put a diminished chord in there and you say, oh, well, let's try that. It doesn't always work, but at least it gives you an idea for things to try,
Yeah. And I imagine your science background, even though it's technically music is math, but music also is science. And
yes.
The technical know-how,
yes.
I imagine that is helpful. Yes. What I remember about you, Rich, is that I don't recall, wild improvisational solos, but yet they seem to be more scripted.
I mean, there's like one or two songs that, we let loose and we go off the beaten path there. But I mean, to me, when I listen to music, the solo guitar stuff that I like is the stuff that's very melodic and memorable.
Yeah.
And the stuff I don't like is, just verbal or, guitar masturbation. Like Eddie Van Halen. Like I can listen to riffs that he's played all. He's wrote some great riffs, but the solos to me are not memorable at all. It's just a bunch of, you know what I mean? Like I much prefer,
George Harrison.
Yeah. Harrison solos or even like someone like Slash, like I can probably sing to you note for note the solo from Sweet Child of Mine. It's amazing. You know what I mean?
I don't know that you can sing it.
Well, yeah, I definitely can't sing it. I can't sing it well. it's just a memorable melody,
Yeah. We did not mention the fact that Rich does not sing.
No.
Not sing.
No.
Okay.
He sings in the car.
Oh, yes, that's right. Yeah, I can see it on the video. It's great.
That's about it.
But when you're scripting these solos or the riffs that you're writing, are you kind of humming it and then all remember? Because I find like my fingers go a certain the muscle memory way, which is the same way I play every solo. But yet, you know, if I'm just humming it to myself, I come up with something great, and then I try to actually record that.
Right,
but it's a lot to remember.
Yeah, it's a little bit of both for me. I mean, Melanie often is very present when I'm writing the solo sections, or a lot of times I'll like, especially when we're writing, I feel like the solos on the recordings get scripted in the days before we go into record. So like, you know, I'll just play like a bunch of different things, and then she'll come down and be like, I really like this, I like this, but here, you know, try this here in this section there. And
sometimes I write your guitar part.
Yeah.
Sometimes he writes my drum part.
Like, I know that the song that we were just talking about, Like a Drum, you know, it's pretty blues rock kind of riff in the verse. And that was actually, Melanie wrote that as a vocal melody. I was like, ooh, I really like that, but I want to play it on a guitar. She's like, write your own melody. This is fine. Yeah. But then, you know, once you put the distortion on and stuff like that, you know, we're like, oh yeah, this is really, really cool. There was another song too that I stole your vocal melody for the
guitar. And there's a few I played on it on the piano. So I remember Like a Drum, I played it on the piano and said you should play it with distorted guitar.
Yeah. But you were singing, da, na, 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 na.
Yeah, well, I thought it would be good for us to sing them together. Yeah. So I've always wanted to write one of those songs where the vocal and the guitar did the same thing, you know?
Oh,
times
a little bit like the, who's
I got, I want you so bad, it's driving me mad.
I was intending that for like a drum, and then I ended up, it didn't work out. But, and then on like Brave and Kind, the chant on the end, I had written that line in a verse, and Rich said that should be a chant at the end.
Yeah.
So like he helps, you know, he influences my lyrics and my drums, and I influence his guitar. Like it really is a collaborative thing.
And in the song Astronauts, the solo is basically just your vocal melody, which is also, you know, 50s, 60s rock kind of, you know, thing that guitar.
Well, what I heard from a classical music teacher recently, friend of ours, I had written that melody for Astronauts, the verse, and he told me it was very similar to Pachelbel's Canon. Which I didn't do on purpose, but
we're going classical.
Yeah, he said the chord structure was similar to
it. It is similar.
One thing begets another, begets another, begets another. Yeah. It all comes from who knows where. Well, I got to say, you guys, I mean, you're not just an inspiration with your ability to survive and to flourish from that, but your musical chops are inspiring. But I find you're actually very, very inspiring on the just from the whole marriage front. It's wonderful to see you two.
We haven't killed each other yet.
No. You just sit next to each other. I haven't seen evil eyes go back and forth. You know, obviously you guys have figured it out, and it's really very, very inspiring, as I said.
Thank you.
Well, we're very lucky.
Melanie Kramer, Rich Labuti, from Circe. And Circe, the name comes from
what? My nickname when I was little, when I was a little girl, my little sister used to call me Circe instead of sister or sissy. And we spelled it phonetically S-I-R-S-Y because we were little kids. And so I had suggested it to Rich as a band name because it's not a word. And so we thought that'll be cool. People will have to just sort of check out the band to see what it is. And it's so funny because, I mean, that was in 2000. And now there's, you know, all these different meanings of Circe that we're learning about. There's Sirius Radio. People think we're related to that somehow. Or there's the Cersei in Game of Thrones, who we haven't seen it yet, but I know we're the only people who haven't. But murders everyone, apparently. And
isn't that what everybody does in that show?
Yeah. I guess. And when we tour down south in like Georgia area, people will tell us that if you give someone a gift for no reason, a little surprise, they call it giving someone a Cersei. And we get emails from folks from Egypt a lot, because apparently it's a popular surname in Egypt. And a Jamaican tea.
Yep. But you were the first, because you got the domain. Cersei.com.
And the trademark, baby.
Oh, excellent. Awesome. That's great. All right. Well, everybody should know, you can look these two up at Cersei.com, and you should. When I saw you guys, I said, this is a band I got to meet. And I'm so glad I did. And when I leaned over to Melanie after your set, and I said, hey, I'd love to talk. And she smiled at me and she said, sure. And obviously, I mean, you know, the only attitude you guys have is a good attitude.
Well, that's nice.
Thanks, Steve.
I hope you make it to the Boston area for a show soon. I would love to see you guys again. Get a good crowd here. All right.
Yeah,
you guys have a show tonight. We fit this in between shows and one of your 250 shows a year. I'm really glad you took the time.
Yep. Likewise. Thank you so much.
Good job.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Right. Bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete. If you like what you hear, you can find Song Creating on your favorite podcast app or at songcreating.com. To check out my own music, go to steverobb.com. And until next time, keep a song in your head and music in your heart. Thanks for listening.